Senate Judiciary Committee, May 6, 1991, 7 p.m.
Order. Yes, Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Senator Peg Jolin from Senate District 22. As per our last hearing, we discovered that a mistake was made somewhere between the handing off of our amendments and legislative counsel. We have caught that. We had the bill reprinted and corrected, and it does exactly as Senator Shoemaker indicated, and it ties lines 18 through 25 on page 1 to on page 2 lines 1 and 2 sub section 1 sub 1, and that was what the committee approved within the committee process, and somehow those provisions were mistied or incorrectly tied to sections 3, 4, and 5 in the bill you had before you at your last session. So it has been fixed to do what the committee voted to approve.
Okay, do we need any further amendment, Ingrid?
Madam Chair, we did not take any action on the A3 amendments, which are the amendments which deal with the civil penalty procedures, and they are the standards amendments that have been used to provide a procedure where none is set forth.
Okay. I hear a motion on the
Move the
Okay, Senator Shoemaker moves the dash 3 amendments. Are there objections to that motion? I'm hearing none, so ordered. Now, and we...
Bill moved as amended.
Yes, we don't have any other amendments that you're offering at this time. Okay, Senator Shoemaker moves Senate Bill 546 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Hamby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Jolin, you can carry the bill. Okay, let's... Senator Dukes is coming.
I'm trying to reach her office. She's not answering.
Well, that's good. I wonder if we have the votes for 722 here.
Madam Chair, I think there's been a middle ground worked out in this. Senator Shoemaker may be in.
Okay.
Better able to tell me whether there's a middle ground worked out.
We'll find out shortly whether there's truly a middle ground.
I think Mr. Williamson indicated to me that there was less of a problem with the bill than when it originally started.
Okay. Senate Bill 722. Bill, you want to pass out what we have?
Sure, I'm passing out the dash. 3 amendments along with the in the gross version.
Bill, you going to tell us what this is, and then Senator Shoemaker will hear from you for comment.
Basically, what the amendments do is they leave current law the same way it is under ORS 12-135 and create basically what you see in here in the amendments and set forth in subsection 2 as a notwithstanding clause. And what it does is it includes under a limited liability architects, landscape architects, and engineers. And it would shorten the statute of ultimate, well, leaves the ultimate statute of repose at 10 years, but it shortens to 2 years, basically, in the area of contracts. I believe the statute of limitations for torts is currently 2 years. And it says here, for torts, it would be with 2 years from the date the injury or damage is first discovered or in the exercise of reasonable care could have been discovered.
Should.
Or should have, excuse me. The bill as originally drafted would have applied beyond the landscape architects, practicing engineers, and architects, and it would have applied into other areas of construction, potentially into contractors. And
it's so where is it now?
It would just apply to landscape architects, architects, and engineers.
Madam Chair, just a word. It's essentially talking about torts. Suppose the two-year statute after discovery or when you should have discovered any damages for injury to person, property, or interest in property, including damages for delay, or, well, that's harder than tort, or economic loss. But it leaves in place the 10-year statute of repose. That's what it does.
Madam Chair, if I could add one other thing. The other thing that it does do, and it was in the original bill also, and that's an important part, it, for the purposes of this section, I'm reading on the back from lines 26 and 27, an improvement to real property shall be considered abandoned on the same date the improvement is considered abandoned under ORS 87045, and that gets into liens, and that references another definition in the statutes relating to date of completion and abandonment.
So what does that mean?
It means that there's a date certain as to when a property is considered abandoned. So that would then start the statute of limitations running from that date.
So if you either should have known there's something wrong with it, or if it were abandoned, that's when it starts to run. So this adds a new element of abandonment as opposed to sort of you should have known, and then it kind of.
No, I think the abandonment would relate to this, the statute of repose.
That's right.
The 2 year statute of limitations would still be 2 years from the time the problem was discovered or should have been discovered. Mm-hmm. So if it's abandoned,
you have 10 years after.
You have 10 years after that, but if during that 10 year period something goes wrong and somebody's hurt. Mm-hmm. In some fashion, then you'd have 2 years from the time that occurs
so that's
to start your action. But in all events, you have to start it within 10 years of the abandonment.
Okay. Is that your understanding, Bill?
That's correct, sir.
Okay. Okay. Well, I think it's improved from where it was when we started it. So I guess I'm willing to support it at this stage.
Okay. Well, I'll move the amendments. Okay.
Senator Shoemaker's moved the dash three amendments. Are there questions, Senator Brock?
The only sponsor of this bill, and it was at the request of the Oregon Council of Architects. Do I not detect architects out there, or do I? Are they in favor of these amendments and the bill as it will be passed out, I suspect?
Madam Chair, I can respond. For whatever reason, they were negotiating with me on it. Maybe I was a swing vote. I don't know.
What does that
tell
me?
And, huh?
The architects
agreed to this.
Okay, that's
and
fine.
They kept pressing for a 6-year statute of repose, and I wasn't going to vote for it on that. Anyway.
Okay.
And Mr. Kafouri is not able to come tonight, so that's why they're not in the audience. So
what would he have said had he been here?
He said okay.
Okay.
Send it on its way.
Okay. Then that's okay.
Okay, are there objections to the dash three amendments? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay.
Go ahead. Want me to move it?
Sure.
Okay, I'll move the bill to the floor. I do pass.
Senator Shoemaker moves Senate Bill 722 to the floor with a due-pass recommendation as we've amended it. Call the roll, please, Kate.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Hamby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for your hard work. Senator Shoemaker.
Do I get the pleasure?
Well, I don't care. I just want to thank you for your hard work.
Oh, sure.
Senator Dukes is chairing a task force and unable to come, so let's start into the Senate Bill 1148 here without her.
Madam Chair, if I could, I have in front of me three sets of amendments with engrossed versions. One of them, the dash one version, is what I put together after some of the issues that were raised at the last meeting, particularly with Senator Shoemaker's questions. The second version, which is not in LC4, is from Senator Dukes. And the dash two version comes from Mr. Hetherington, who's representing the, I guess, the fraternities and sororities. And what I will do is
Well, why haven't you gotten them together?
I do have them. I just want to explain them first, and it was kind of looking to see who was.
They're all. They're not incompatible.
Oh, they are incompatible. At least the Mr. Hetherington's version and the bill are incompatible. They
excuse
do.
Me.
Mr. Hetherington's version of amendments and the amendments that I did for the committee as a result of some of the comments and Senator Duke's amendments, they would be incompatible. The first would be incompatible with the other two proposals.
First meeting.
Mr. Hetherington's.
How come his is first then?
His is actually two. The dash one are the ones that I did, and the unmarked ones are the ones coming in from the ones that have yet to go to the Legislative Council's office from Senator Duke's.
Okay. We may end up tabling this bill after all. But let's see where we are.
I'm going to do this first.
Sure.
You could just get one set. If you
see
the other, I'll pass these out.
Of paper.
Yes.
We have three or two. Tell me we're not printing this stuff on this paper bag material. Isn't it cheaper?
I don't know. It's more expensive. I don't. Anyway, okay, Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
One amendment, there's two amendments and other amendments.
One's are one. Let me start off with the ones that I did. Those are the dash one version. And that
okay, now tell me, when you start off with the ones you did, what is incompatible with them? Are the Senator Duke's amendments incompatible with them?
No, they're not.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The main thing is, first off, it would be amending the relating clauses relating to hazing rather than the relating to crime. And that is
the dash which amendments?
The dash one.
Dash one. Okay.
Right. And that's to overcome a Scribner's error. What happens when the bill was drafted, it was the relating clause was written too narrowly. You notice it says relating to civil causes of action up above and punishes organizations by not fines not exceeding $1,000, and that says relating to crime. Well, it was just where you have a civil cause of action, you just can't put it in the bill that says just relating to crime. The other thing that did, after some comments that were made last week, any person or a parent of any legal guardian of a person who has been the victim of hazing, added after that, who has been victim of hazing is defined. Let me go back. Let me go to the amendment now.
Yeah, which one are you on?
Dash one amendment.
Right. Any organization whose members, employees, officers, or directors engaged in hazing has been added to line six. Oh, excuse me. Back again. Added in line five, any person, a parent of any legal guardian of any person who's been the victim of hazing is defined. I'm trying to say is that was to flesh the definition out, because as originally drafted, it appeared that the guardian, a person, had to be hazed to have a cause of action. This clarifies that their cause of action would arise because they are the guardian, a parent of a person who has been hazed.
Okay.
And then going down further, there were some concerns about the language of members of an organization responsible for hazing. What I did was set forth three situations. An organization whose members, employees, officers, or directors engage in hazing. B, any individual member of an organization who participates in hazing other than the victim of hazing, or C, any officer, director, or employee of an organization that knows or should have known that the organization engages in hazing or that the organization is about to engage in hazing.
Now, what does that change the current statute?
This is all new statute. So there's no current statute here. This changes the current bill in the sense that it references back to an organization responsible for hazing.
Okay, I want to call up Mr. Hetherington to see whether he agrees with this definition.
Well, if you're asking me whether or not I agree with the definition, the answer is probably yes. But if you,
so you think this is okay?
No. No, I agree with the definition, but I'd like to have the whole section taken out. Sections 1 and 2.
Why?
Well, I probably should identify myself. Jeff Hetherington, I'm representing Delta Tau Delta Fraternity. The whole issue of creating a new cause of action under the civil laws for hazing is, as far as we're concerned, is a real problem, and particularly when you start tying in any organization whose members engage in hazing and so on, that goes right to our national fraternities and to our national offices. You get down into the thing where known or should have known, you get a jury, frankly, that'll decide that we should have known whatever our kids are doing on each of our 100 and some odd campuses at any particular time, it creates quite a problem for us. Civil, we have enough trouble with civil actions as it is without creating a whole new cause. The other problem, of course, is that you've extended the statute of limitations to 3 years here. I think from, I can only speak for our particular fraternity, but for fraternities in general, we can certainly have no trouble with some of the changes that are in the hazing part, the Section 3 on. But you put a new civil cause of action, and I would imagine all the national fraternities are going to come out of the woodwork on this bill.
The original bill had civil cause of action, right?
No.
Yes.
Oh, the original bill did, yes.
So you don't really want this bill?
I don't want sections 1 and 2.
Okay.
From our point of view, if you're looking at where the real teeth go in, is taking it from a violation up to a misdemeanor, and that we've testified that at least from our point of view, we're in favor of.
Madam Chair, if I could.
Senator, that's Bill.
I overlooked one thing. This Dash 1 amendments also, on the last line of the bill on 26, reduces the penalty from a Class A misdemeanor to a Class C misdemeanor.
Okay. What's the current status of a civil suit in these circumstances?
Madam Chair, it would be 2 years in the court.
So, with no specific civil cause mentioned about hazing.
That's correct, Madam Chair. You would
just
bring
an ordinary old tort that you.
Sure.
But it wouldn't be a specific tort named hazing.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Under current statutes.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, folks, we have a. I'm not proposing that we make it this very second, but certainly there is the issue of whether you want to create a specific civil action on hazing, sections 1 and 2, that goes beyond or beyond what the normal civil tort claim would be.
Madam Chair, I think we're just creating problems that are unnecessary. We've got a crime, you commit a crime, you can be sued for that. We also have a statement of policy that they shall not do this. I don't see why we need to create an explicit tort. And I agree with Mr. Hetherington, we're just going to cause a bunch of trouble if we do. That's a problem.
Okay. Then let's set that aside for a moment and get on to Senator Duke's amendment, since we've dealt with the dash ones, right?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Isn't that correct? I mean, basically what we have with the dash ones are your flushing out of what Section 1 and 2 would look like.
Except
and then the and the change in misdemeanor size.
That's correct.
Okay, but I'm not going to forget about that.
Okay.
Okay.
I think quite
Senator
a bit
Dukes.
Of Senator Duke's amendment in our, let me go, if I could. Senator, I apologize. I just saw these about 5 this afternoon.
Delete excessive on line 21. On section 3, mm-hmm. She wants to take out excessive for calisthenics.
I think you've got a hand in gross.
Yeah, we do.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I'm just targeting. And she wants to delete line 7 on page 2, what it looks like, which was what? Long-term servitude.
That's okay. Huh?
And she wants to delete N, which is?
Delete the organization.
Yeah, do this.
Causes one, delete the organization.
Okay, yeah. Does anyone have any objections to the Senator Duke's amendments to Section 3 of 1148?
What? I don't know that I do, but I'm just puzzled. Why would she take out compelling long-term personal servitude as a hazing activity?
Bill. Well, I think we had a discussion of what was long-term and what was short-term and whether it was going to be 5 days or no days, and so they just... struck it rather than kind of get into that debate of what was
okay.
What was more than 5 days or what, and we might, I don't know whether Mr. Hetherington might want to come up and either change what the Senator Dukes is recommending here or not. But
well, the only thing we objected to in that particular thing was the term long term, which would go back to the original wording of the law that just said compelled personal servitude.
That would be right.
Yeah, that's okay. So shall we leave that in then and just take out long term and leave compelled personal servitude in? Are there objections to reamending Senator Duke's amendments to that effect?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I somehow have a feeling that's what they intended. It's a rough amendment. It was done by staff in her office this afternoon, and I somehow don't think that they intended to.
Well, by deleting line 7, they probably meant to delete long-term.
Sure.
Yeah.
And not the existing law, since that's what we're dealing with. So we can assume that that's taken care of. There are the objections to Senator Duke's amendments on Section 3. Hearing none, so ordered. Again, with the understanding that we're going to just take out long-term on line 7 and leave the rest of the current statute in place. Okay, Mr. Hetherington, see what you want to do here.
Well, some of it you've already taken care of. As I indicated, I did want sections 1 and 2 deleted. My proposed amendments...
you took out long-term, you took out...
Well, I took out long-term. We did do the excessive. What I did in these amendments in terms of English was to take out the not related to customary school-sanctioned athletic events, training, or other simple, similar contests or competition. I did that throughout the bill and then restored the language, which is on page 2 at line 18, which says subsection 1 does not apply to curricular activities, and then added the words, or to athletic teams, intramural events, or similar contests or competitions of or conducted by the college or university.
Ms. Taylor, what's the effect of doing that? Is that cleaner, better?
I don't know, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, there are some...
Senator Shoemaker.
There are some activities which are hazing that we wouldn't want to permit done by an athletic team either. I kind of think we're better to stay with the original language, just targeted to those particular activities that are not related to customary school-sanctioned athletic events.
The original language, what, in the bill or...
In the bill.
Okay.
Yeah. As Senator Dukes has left it, okay. I think we're all trying to get at the same thing, but I'm a little bit worried that, like, you could have teams that probably do engage in some, or could well engage in what amounts to hazing, and I don't know that we want to encourage that.
Okay.
I would, if you struck the words athletic teams out of that section three, there was some talk about problems with curricular activities. Intramural events really ought to be thrown in there because they are...
Where? Everywhere?
Either everywhere or within that, if you want to restore the language of subsection of that subsection three.
Senator Shoemaker is advocating that it not be restored and that we put it in. Isn't that what I...
What I'm suggesting is that we stay with the present language of the bill and that we have that exception attached to wearing or carrying obscene articles, participating in boxing matches or other physical activities, and what's the other one? There's one more in here, I think. Maybe that's it.
I think that's it. Current law does exempt athletic teams. I'll also say I really don't feel strongly one way or another, but...
But I'm not sure that when you think about it, I'm not sure that makes a lot of sense.
So I guess I would say that if we're going to retain it in the two other places in the bill, that we need to add the word intramural events or similar contests of competition. We need to say...
Well, those were school sanctioned, aren't they?
I don't know. Jeff,
actually,
you want to comment
to
that?
Yes.
They are?
Yes.
Okay, so the intramural will fit under that as a matter of the...
Yeah, as long as you make it part of legislative intent, I think it would, yes.
Okay. School sanctioned athletic events would be intramural pieces, okay. Okay, well, I don't... Bill?
Madam Chair, Mr. Hetherington, when you might mean by intramural events, you mean sports events that the university itself has organized for being played among its students?
That is correct.
That's opposed to, say, a pickup game that would take place among and between students on their own.
That is correct. And then the last line, which is near and dear to my heart on page 21, we would delete the word judicial and substitute the word criminal in terms of showing consent. Again, as a comment I made earlier, that in a criminal proceeding, hazing is hazing, and a person who conducts it should be guilty of a crime. But in a civil proceeding, I think that the acquiescence by an individual to being hazed should be admissible. They are adults in a criminal proceeding. I know this creates a sort of a duality here, but in a civil proceeding, we are talking about people who are generally over the 18 on both sides of the fence, and at least from our point of view, if you are engaging in hazing either as the perpetrator or the person who's being hazed, we'll throw both of them out. We don't think that's a double standard. We think that the person who allows himself to be hazed does have some responsibility, and in a civil proceeding, we'd like to make sure that's maintained.
Madam Chair.
Well, if you go along with it, do you toss off your ability to seek a civil suit? You do, don't you, in here somewhere?
No, it just, if you go along with it, it means that that can be raised in a civil suit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I that was going to be my comment. It simply makes evidence of acquiescence admissible. It does not necessarily constitute a defense. Depends on a lot of other circumstances, I would think.
Correct.
How does the committee feel about the Hetherington Amendment in line 21, page 2? Because that's where we're talking about, right?
Madam Chair, I have a question for clarity. If we're taking out the civil definition of hazing activity, are we now talking about civil actions that would flow from the hazing activity, mm-hmm. for example?
Under normal course of...
Okay.
Right?
You'll have to ask that question a little simpler.
Okay. Why don't you ask him again?
Sure, Madam Chair. Mr. Hetherington, so we're talking about if we take this out, then we've taken out the definition of hazing, if we take the definition out, and I believe we have, on the civil part. So you no longer have a civil cause of hazing as you would have had the bill passed in its original form. So I take it we're saying that acquiescence will not...
...provide psychiatric treatment and evaluation for children and adolescents who are determined by the juvenile court to be in need of such services. Passage of the Senate Bill 50 allows the Mental Health Division flexibility in providing services and accommodating the court. It allows the division the ability to determine the clinically appropriate setting the evaluation and treatment will take place. Currently, the juvenile court orders evaluations and treatment directly to the Child and Adolescent Treatment Program at Oregon State Hospital for 30 days. This facility is considered, and a continuum of care is considered the most secure, restricted setting to provide these services. It is our contention that it's better for a child to be provided these services in the least restrictive, normalized setting they can responsibly handle. It is better, when clinically appropriate, to keep the child close to family in their home environment, to their home school, to their friends, while providing these services. This bill allows the division the ability to determine the most clinically appropriate, less restrictive, normalized, safe setting, close to family and friends, to complete the evaluation and treatment. Due to the limited inpatient resources available through CATP, it has been difficult at times to accommodate the juvenile court and the many other competing interests for bed space within this small facility. Passage of Senate Bill 50 would allow the Mental Health Division to access local hospital alternatives in the child's community and other Medicaid reimbursable resources to their greatest potential for the juvenile court-ordered child, thereby allowing CATP to be more accommodating to those who need the most secure, restrictive environment. In general, the bill allows for more individually developed services based upon the child's actual clinical needs. The division has worked cooperatively with the Children's Services Division, the Juvenile Department Directors Association through Larry Oglesby, and the Department of Justice in developing the amendments to the bill being presented. The division requests your support of Senate Bill 50, and I'm available for any questions you have.
Any other questions? Anyone else would like to speak? I think the bill's been worked over pretty well, mm-hmm. so I think we ought to consider moving it today.
What was the reason for the mental health division not being appointed guardian? My attention was diverted when it was mentioned.
Well, I think it's a matter of conflict. in terms of treatment, we might go through it, and either one of you speak to that issue.
Yeah, it's basically, Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, a conflict of interest reason that, especially in psychiatric settings where you are, for example, using forced meds or some sort of restraint, the treatment provider might recommend this medication, and you don't want them also giving permission.
That's just during the...
During the treatment.
Right.
But it has been the Attorney General's general advice to the division and its institutions not to be in the business of being a guardian for its patients.
Yeah, we do have another bill that makes it much more widespread.
Yes, House Bill 2709 would forbid it.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Hill.
Are you doing this because it's really in the best interest of the children, or is it mainly a resource issue?
Madam Chair, Senator Hill, actually, it will work to the child's benefit. It has worked in the past year since the last bill was proposed, the last session, and there have been some crisis situations where we've had to go in and actually ask the judge to change the order because we just could not accommodate, or there were more pressing needs of another child. In the past year, the counties and CSD and mental health have been working together more cooperatively so that what they can do is accommodate not just this child, but several children whose placement potentially would be changed or compromised by just making a placement of one child without looking at the variables involving the other children in the situation.
Yes. There have been several situations where a child has been able to particularly be served in their local community through a local hospital, and they receive the evaluation services there where their family and friends could come and visit them. It's a less restrictive environment. They weren't locked in, and they were also deemed to be able to handle that kind of environment during the evaluation. So from the child and the family's point of view, it's a much more normalized setting for them to receive those services.
Well, I just know that everybody's resources are pressed. I just wanted to make sure that it's mainly for the interest of the child. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Ingrid?
Madam Chair, if I could ask a question just for clarification. The bill requires that when the court is going to order services or an examination through the mental health division, that the mental health division consult with the court and other agencies. Mm-hmm. And then it indicates that if there's an objection by one of those other agencies, that the court makes a determination as to the actual placement. What if only the court is displeased with the decision of the other affected persons?
Madam Chair, committee counsel, when we were discussing this with Larry Oglesby, who is representing the Juvenile Department Directors Association, and he was also speaking, I think, informally on behalf of the juvenile referees, because they are no longer, I understand, have an entity that will speak for them. But it was his opinion that the juvenile department would probably not have an opinion if all the agencies were working together. Their main concern was that this child get some sort of treatment or an exam and get it on a timely basis rather than where that it occurred. They just wanted it to occur and wanted the agencies to work together. And I think part of the problem in the past has been that the agencies have not been working together. They've been working independently and have not been consulting beforehand. They often consulted afterwards, necessitating an additional hearing. But in this way, they'll consult beforehand. But you're right. We do not have a place that if the judge simply objects, we have if another agency objects. Perhaps Gail can address this, because it's usually CSD that would oppose something that mental health would do.
I don't think Ingrid's proposing anything.
No, just asking for clarification, Madam Chair.
Okay.
because I think that is, in fact, a restriction on the authority of the court, and counsel indicated that she thought that was an inaccurate statement, but I think maybe it's correct that we are restricting the court's authority.
In that case, we are. That's small. Not as much as what you said before when you took it out altogether, but... Okay. Further comments, further questions? Thank you all very much.
I'm sure, so the court can't... There has to be some difference of opinion between the agencies before the court can intervene.
Well, the court's going to make the order.
Okay.
And then they look at it.
Right, that there needs to be an evaluation. I mean, they make the first determination.
Yeah. Okay.
That there's going that there's there there needs to be that they want an evaluation.
Okay.
And we're not sort of allowing them to say which agency or whom or where. I think that's, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, same sort of...
They probably shouldn't.
That's correct, Madam Chair. The court would not be in the business of deciding where. They would be in the business of saying, we want the evaluation, we want the treatment. You decide where, because... And we do believe that this is focusing a clinical decision on the clinicians and not making the judge make a clinical decision.
Okay. Does the committee feel comfortable?
Yes. And Madam Chair, move Senate Bill 50 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Yes, I think Ingrid's looked it over pretty carefully, and there are no amendments needed. And Senator Hill, move Senate Bill 50 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
You didn't do any amendments while I was out there?
Nope.
Okay.
Is it as it came? This has been through one committee already.
Yeah, I know.
I just,
that's why I was worried you might have done something with it.
Education. Not yours.
Do we ever hear from the juvenile judges?
Did you? Oglesby's online, they say.
How about my friend Steve Harrell?
I don't know if Harrell's in the business of making clinical discussions. Have you heard Harrell on this issue?
Larry Oglesby represents the Juvenile Department Association, Directors Association, and I don't know, is Mr. Harrell...
No, he's a judge.
Multnomah County's presiding judge for juvenile.
Well, I'm sure he would have weighed in by now if he thought there was a problem.
He was handling night court.
I did talk with Madam Chair Kingsley Click of the Judicial Department, and... She indicated that they are not taking any formal position, but they have reviewed this bill along with other bills and did not, no objections were raised to it.
Okay. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Hamby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Okay.
We go home.
Someone has a revised agenda.
Good.
Back on it.